Blog Talk Radio.
With the song Happy, and I picked that song especially for my guest tonight because she is one happy author, because she writes children's books, and I believe that children's books should always be happy, and the author should always be happy. It comes through. This is Off the Chain. I am your host, Yvonne Mason, and I want to thank each and every one of you for being here with me tonight. This is Friday night, absolutely. Now, y'all know I love numbers. It's one of the things that I do because I believe that numbers tell a story, just like our words tell a story. Numbers tell a story. Well, tonight's story with numbers is that thanks to all of you, listeners as well as guests, we are 1,911 listeners away from 70,000 listeners on this show. We are at 68,089 listeners just on the show as of this morning. I am just beyond humbled because with all of my guests and all of my listeners, y'all make this show the success that it is. Australia, thank you. You are my biggest listening base. Thank you for giving us the blues band, the Teskey Brothers, because they bring back so many memories to me of the great blues singers, the Robert Johnsons, the Eric Claptons, the Johnny Langs, the Roy Orbisons, the B.B. Kings. They're all of those people rolled into one magnificent blues band. So thank you, Australia, for giving us the Teskey Brothers. And when you add all of the podcasts that this thing is played on, it's played on iTunes, YouTube, FM.com, TuneIn Radio, Podcast Garden, Podcast.com, Mixcloud, SoundCloud, Spreaker, and some I don't even know about. We have reached a grand total of, are y'all ready? 85,195 listeners. That is amazing. The show's not even 2 years old, and it is so successful because of all of y'all, and I appreciate it. Which brings me to a return guest who I absolutely adore. And like I said, I picked the song Happy for her because it fits tonight's show. Children's author Wanda Luthman. She published her first children's book, The Lilac Princess, in 2014. Then she published The Tale of Tad and A Turtle's Magical Adventure in March of 2016. In August of 16, she debuted Little Birdie Grows Up, which was her first picture book. She has her Master's of Arts in both mental health counseling and guidance counseling from the Rawlings College, located in beautiful Winter Park, Florida. She has worked at a local community mental health center for 10 years before moving over to the public school system as a guidance counselor. She worked at a high school for the past 18 years, and she has been an adjunct professor at the local community college and worked with teens who have lost a loved one through hospice. Now, to me, that is one of the most beautiful callings anyone can do. She's always loved reading and writing and has written many books and poems as a child growing up in the great state of Missouri. She presently resides in Brevard County, Florida, with her husband of 21 years and two beautiful, beautiful, beautiful fur baby dogs. Her daughter has finally flown the nest. She's away at college. And what Wanda says is this, and I quote, "I want to inspire young children to be the best people they can be. If I can capture children's imagination and entertain them, then they, the underlying positive character message, will come through in each of my books," end quote. Wanda, thank you so, so much for coming on tonight. Wanda, did we lose you? I think we lost her. She is traveling in her car, and I don't know if they hit a dead zone or not, but we will continue until she calls back in. They went to Disney, and they were on their way home, so hopefully she will call back here shortly and talk to us. Wanda has been on the show a couple of times. In fact, a couple of her books, the one called Little Bird Leaves the Nest, talks about a little bird who grows up and leaves his nest. The Lilac Princess is a modern-day fairy tale of a young princess with too much responsibility and not enough freedom. She is an only child to an elderly king and queen of a kingdom. And there is Wanda again. Let me see if we can get her back.
So sorry. Sorry about that.
That's all right. I was just carrying on like I always do. Welcome to the show. I hope you enjoyed the song. I picked that song especially for this show tonight.
I love that song. You did good. That was a great song.
I could see you and your husband dancing in the car.
Yeah, we were doing a jig.
Now I believe it. that's Wanda's husband, ladies and gentlemen, and he will probably join us tonight, which is great because they're traveling in the car and they're talking to us on the car phone. So let's before we talk about the book. Let's talk about you for a little bit. I found out some wonderful things about you, and one is that you are a country music lover. Did that start?
I sure am.
Is that old school, new school, all school? When did it happen? How did it happen?
Oh, okay, that's a good story. I like all of it. And how it started was I was living in Missouri, and I needed a job, and I started a job in downtown St. Louis, Missouri, at a hotel, being a lifeguard. And so I had a commute, about an hour commute, and it was my dad's car, and he only had AM radio. So the only thing you could listen to was country music. So I wound up falling in love with it after listening to it for that whole summer.
I understand that, because we had the same issue growing up. You only had AM radio, and Daddy loved country. And I'm talking about the old country music, what we used to call the country twang.
Oh, yeah, Patsy Cline.
Yeah. The oldies, but the goodies. Well, I told you before the show that there's a story about Brantley Gilbert that I don't know if you know about. I know you're on my page and you follow me a lot. But when my little granddaughter, who we lost 2 years ago, was in Walmart, and Brantley Gilbert lives in the same town as my children. So they were in... My daughter and my granddaughter were in Walmart, and Ramonda looked at her mom and said, "Mom, BG's behind us." And Brandy said, "Oh, okay, that's fine." So they get on through the line, and Brandy pays for her groceries, and Brandy knows everybody in Walmart because it's a small town. So the customer service supervisor came up and said, "Does Ramonda want a picture made with Brantley Gilbert?" Brandy said, "Well, if he's got time, fine. If not, that's okay, too. We'll catch him another time." Well, Ramonda didn't have confidence in herself because of all of her health issues. She had psoriasis, dermatitis. She had asthma. So many things were wrong with her. Well, Brantley, the women were all crowding around Brantley, and he said, "Look, let me pay for my stuff, and if I decide to get pictures made, I'm having my picture made with her first," talking about little Ramonda. So he paid for all of his stuff, and he called Ramonda over to him, and he said, "Let's have our picture made." Well, because she was having a bad skin day, she wouldn't get next to him because she'd been bullied in school. They had to pull her out of school because of the bullying. So he just reached around her and pulled her into his arms and held her tight, and we've got the picture of him loving her and holding her. Giving her that confidence that she needed. Well, 2 years later, she died from an asthma attack. Well, when that happened, and she was at Scottish Rite Children's Hospital in Atlanta, Brantley and his new wife, Amber, who were on their honeymoon, sent a note to my children via a text message.
Wow.
So that man holds a very special place in my heart.
Yeah. Wow.
But because she didn't believe in herself, he helped her believe in herself.
That's amazing. You know, like what one person can do for another, you just never know, you know?
Exactly. And it starts within us. And for you to write the stories that you do and teach the lessons that you do, it makes me happy, because your books for children are not just mundane books. They're books with a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And I love it. I love you for it.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's important to me not just to entertain, but to bring forth a message that might actually help somebody. You know, that's my counseling heart, to try to help people. And if I can do that through a book, then that's what I want to do, you know.
Well, what I find so interesting is, and ladies and gentlemen, I didn't believe this either when I did the deep dive on her, because y'all know I do deep dive on my guests, because I like to find the little tidbits, the little nuggets, I call them. This woman says she's an introvert. Now, I find that hard to believe, because she has one of the most infectious laughs and personalities of anyone I've ever met. She writes some of the most beautiful stories for children. Why in the world were you an introvert, my friend?
Well, I think that's just genetic. My dad is a shy person, but my mom's a very outgoing person. But when I was a kid, I was just painfully shy. I would hide behind my mother's skirt, and if people talked to me, I would just tremble. I didn't want to be noticed, seen. I didn't want anybody talking to me or dealing with me at all, you know. And I mean, I remember those feelings, just like being terrified, you know, of people talking to me. And so I get it when, you know, I as an adult am talking to a child and they're all terrified. I'm like, okay, I'm going to back off here. I know I'm freaking them out, you know. So I was very much inside myself. And that's a piece of why I started writing as a kid, is I felt more comfortable expressing myself in writing than I did talking.
Well, let me ask you this. What helped you, first of all, before what helped you, what made you decide that you were cheating yourself by being so introverted? And then what helped you come out of that shell and learn that it's okay to be an extrovert and it's okay to retreat back into that shell from time to time to regroup?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm trying to remember exactly kind of when it happened. It seemed like it was middle school when I decided I needed to work on that. And, you know, I really think as a middle school person, you do a lot of self-evaluation, you know, and my mom and my sister and my brother are all very outgoing. My sister and brother are older than me, and I mean, they could talk to a fence post, you know what I'm saying? I mean, and I, you know, I would watch them and I would think, how did they do that? I mean, they would strike up a conversation with just anybody and be laughing and talking to them, you know, in 5 minutes, like they were their best friend. So I watched them a lot because, like I said, I was very quiet and withdrawn, and I just sat back and watched things, you know. And so I would try to be a little bit more like them and just really worked at it. And I remember, I think it was eighth grade, to stand up and give a speech in class. I thought I was going to die, you know. I just really thought I was going to die. But I made it through it, and I think that was the beginning that helped me start to turn that corner, because I faced my fear and realized I lived through it, you know.
Would it be fair to say that we fear that which we don't understand, and as children, we know that we're different, but we don't know how we're different, and yet we have that fear of changing, because that means that we have to do something that goes against the tide, so to speak. It's easier to take that well-worn path that we're comfortable with and then to step out of your comfort zone and say, okay, I'm going to come out of this shell now. That's a scary thing for anybody, much less a child.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, to step out of your comfort zone, that is so difficult. And you think back to when you were a middle schooler and how awkward you felt, and, you know, your body was changing, your voice was changing, you know, everything just felt all discombobulated. And so to try and get out of your comfort zone, you were already in a bad zone, you know, and to really push out of that is really asking a lot, you know. But I really think that staying inside became more painful than facing the fear and pushing beyond it, you know, for me.
Would it be fair to say that somewhere in the near future you might do a children's book on that?
Ooh, that is a very good idea. I had not thought of that. That is really interesting. Yes, I like it. I like it. I definitely will do that.
Yeah, because you could take your own personal experiences and put them in a format that a child understands. You could do it two ways. You could do it for the little ones, because even little ones are introverted, and you could do it for that preteen, you know, tween, middle school age kid that's having an issue. Mm-hmm. Let's face it, middle school kids are too old to be babies. They're too young to be mm-hmm. teenagers, and they're that in between yeah. stage. They don't know who they are. Their parents certainly don't know who they are. And if things are going to go south, they're going to go south then.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. They're neither fish nor fowl kind of thing. You know, they don't fit in
yeah.
anywhere.
Mm-hmm. And trying to find that niche, and you already have this introverted shell around you. And, of course, when you're introverted, that's when the bullies have fun with you because, oh, here's somebody
yeah.
that I can pick on because they're not going to fight
right.
back because they're scared of their own shadow. How many times did you hear that one growing up?
Right. That's the truth. You know, that, you know, you're not going to fight back. You're like an easy target. So, you know, they're coming after you.
Well, there you go. There is your goal for your next
mm-hmm.
two books, one for the middle school, one for the little.
I love it. Yeah, I love it. I think that is great. That's great.
See, ladies and gentlemen, we do all kinds of things on this show, ladies and gentlemen. That's why we call it Off the Chain. I give my guest ideas. They take them and run with them. They have fun with them. And we learn stuff. Now, another thing I
mm-hmm.
learned about you is you were a competitive swimmer. Now, being a competitive, was this during that time when you were introverted? Was it like a escape? Because as a competitive swimmer, you're really in competition with yourself. Even though you have people in either lane, you really are in competition with yourself more than someone else. Would that be a fair statement?
That would be fair. And, you know, the other thing about swimming is you don't talk while you're working out. You know, your head is down in the water and you're doing your thing. And so it really kind of fits for an introvert because you can just work out and you're still with people. You're not alone, but you don't have to talk. You don't have to carry on a conversation.
And you're totally focused on what you're doing, so you're not distracted
mm-hmm.
by
mm-hmm.
people around
yeah.
you. And did that make you more introverted or did it help you come out of your shell?
It's so funny. I think because I started swimming competitively when I was 6. I was, you know, first grade. And
wow.
So I don't really remember like making friends on the team or anything. I just go work out and, you know, go to the practice and do whatever the coach said and go home. But when I got older, I swam while I was in middle school. And to me, that was that really painful time. You know, I mean, it was painful when I was young, but it was a real painful time, that middle school time. And to me, swimming gave me confidence. It was the one thing I knew I did well, you know. And so I felt most at home there. And other people that swam, you had kind of something you could talk about, like, you know, how was practice today or whatever. So it helped to start opening those doors for me to start talking to people at that awkward age.
When you started coming out of that introverted shell,
mm-hmm.
did you feel like you were shedding a skin and finally like a flower opening up and blossoming and finding out things about yourself and others and the world around you that you didn't know before?
Absolutely, because, I mean, right in there around 8th grade is kind of when I started dealing with this and trying to come out. Well, for 9th grade, and I became a cheerleader. So think about that, right? From
wow,
the 60,
yeah.
I know, but I would not have done that if my friend hadn't said, come on, tryouts are today, you're coming with me. And I was like, well, I don't know how to do a cartwheel, you know. And she's like, I'll teach you, you know. And so that was the only reason that I went out for cheerleading. And lo and behold, I made it. And you won't believe this, Yvonne. We went to summer camp because they wanted to teach you some cheers and stuff. And what happened was me and another girl I'm a very much of a, I can see a big picture and I want to organize things. So I became like a natural leader because it was frustrating me that people were just like standing around and weren't getting started. They, you know, we were supposed to be starting. And so me and this other girl kind of took charge. And it's really funny to think about that, that I was so, just the year before, so introverted. And then here I was taking charge. But the taking charge wasn't because I wanted people to notice me or look at me. It was more frustration that things weren't organized. Isn't that funny?
So I love
it. As I started opening up, you're right, like the onion, the layers started peeling back, and I found new things about myself that I did not know about before.
And look at you now.
Yeah. Yes, look at me now.
You've written all these books. You worked with children who lost a loved one through hospice. You've been in mental health counseling. You've worked in a high school for 18 years with all these kids. It just goes to show, Wanda, that when the heart and the head are in sync, great things happen.
Yeah, yeah.
And that brings me up to your – go ahead, finish your statement, because I think I know where you're going. Go ahead.
When I started, so I graduated college with my degree in mental health counseling and started working at the Community Mental Health Center. And they wanted me to do a community seminar about chronic mental illness. And that we had no idea who was going to show up. It was just advertised and, you know. Anyway, the auditorium started filling up. And the auditorium held 100, 150 people. I was so freaked out. I mean, really freaked out that I was going to have to speak in front of 100, 150 people. I really thought there'd be five, you know. Well, I was supposed to be making coffee and, you know, like with the glass, whatever, you know, that you fill the water up in to pour down the back. And I cracked it and broke it because I was so nervous. You know, I banged it on something, and they were like, you know, it's going to be okay. Calm down. And they talked me down off the cliff, you know. And I went out there, and I gave that speech, trembly voice and everything, but I made it through. And a large part of it was because I did know the topic, so I could kind of just focus on that. But that was another turning point for me, because talking in eighth grade was to like a little class of 15 or 20. And then here as a young adult, I was addressing 100, 150 people. And that was another turning point where like, okay, I can talk to more people, you know. So that was a really neat thing, too, to start growing even more out of that shell.
And again, you're peeling back the layers. And that brings me to the next thing that I found out about you. And I'm thinking that this thing has helped you grow even more and that you do contemplative meditation.
Yeah. That's
what is that?
That's been really neat. Well, that was probably about 5 years ago. My pastor said, you know, from the pulpit, he had written a book. And, you know, I was wanting to publish my book, but I hadn't gone down that road yet. So I told him after the service I wanted to buy his book. And I had no idea what it was about. So I bought his book and I started reading it. Well, it turns out it wasn't like a book you sit down and just read through. It was a daily meditation guide and took you through 28 days of meditation and basically taught you how to do what's called contemplative meditation. And he would give you kind of a topic, and he'd talk about it, and then he would give you some scripture, and then he would give you some questions that he would ask you to just quiet your mind and kind of ask this question to yourself, not out loud, but inside, and just sit quietly with yourself. Like, try not to have really any thoughts and just let it just be, you know, just sort of be with that question. And then afterwards, you would sit for maybe 20 minutes. Then you'd write about what sort of impressions or whatever you got during that time. And so that is what contemplative meditation is. And it changed my life. I've always been a Christian, believe in God and Jesus and all of that, went to church, but I don't really think I ever met God, and I know that sounds crazy, but when I started doing this and really quieting myself, because always I was taught to pray, like you talk during the prayer. Well, this mm-hmm. was you're waiting and listening for God to talk to you. And when I did that, that's when I felt like I met God. I'm like, oh, I should have shut up a long time ago. So,
and I understand exactly what you're saying, because we are told to just be still and listen.
Yes, yes. We just don't ever do it, but yeah.
We learn a lot of things when we shut up and just listen. Well, that now helps you even more so, because it strengthened your faith, which is very important. It strengthened mm-hmm. your inner peace, which is extremely important. And it's giving you the availability to do now what you do. And it's just another day at the office. I mean, it's something you're comfortable with. It's part of who you are now.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. I do it every day.
Because I don't think that down the road in the past, you could have come on this show not once, not twice, but now four times, and we have as much fun as we have and talk about the things we've talked about, and you'd be comfortable with it. But it's just like we're having a conversation with just me and you, and nobody else is involved.
Yeah, I know. If I think about it too much, it gets me nervous.
Don't think about it. It's just me and you, 100,000 other people.
But
it's just me and you.
This is me and you.
Now, I want to go back a little ways. I want to go back into your childhood mm-hmm. because this brings us up to the latest written book. And ladies and gentlemen, the book mm-hmm. is called Frankie the Finicky Flamingo. And Frankie has some issues, and all you young parents out there, and some of you older parents, you probably have these issues within your own home, because Wanda had this issue as a child, and then the sins of the fathers rained down on the daughter. Tell the folks the backstory of Frankie the Finicky Flamingo. And how you overcame it, both with yourself and your daughter. And we may have lost Wanda again, so we will just carry on. I'll go back, and I'm hearing her, but I think, are you there with me, Wanda?
Okay, yes. Okay, I don't know what happened. I'm sitting in my driveway, so nothing should be happening. But anyway, so when I was a kid, I was an incredibly picky eater, and a lot of it focused on how the food felt in my mouth. So it wasn't just the taste, it was how it felt. And so when I was little, we would all sit around and have breakfast before we went to school. My dad went to work. My mom cooked a full-on breakfast, eggs, bacon, grits, the whole nine yards. But before we started, we had a little fruit, and my fruit was a canned pear. And I hated the canned pear because it was a little vein running through it, and I would gag and choke on that. And it's so funny because you think, I mean, if I ate a pear today, I probably couldn't even tell there was some sort of string in it, But when I was a kid, I thought I was going to die. And that was one of the things. When I went to school, all through elementary school, I packed my lunch because I wasn't about to buy whatever was serving because I was pretty sure I wasn't going to like anything. And so the only thing I wanted to eat was a hot dog. And it wouldn't even be heated up. You know, it'd be cold from the refrigerator, no bun. That's what I ate every single day during elementary school.
A cold hot dog.
A cold hot dog, yeah. Oh, my Lord is right. And I remember one time sitting at the dinner table, and I had to finish eating my peas or I could not get up from the table. And I was trying really hard to eat those peas, you know, but I didn't like how they mushed in my mouth and they tasted all pasty to me. And I mean, by the time I got that last spoonful down, I was running to the bathroom barfing. I mean, I just could not stand it. It was awful. And I mean, just that's how food was for me. You know, there were, if it tasted funny or it felt funny more so, I just couldn't stand eating it. But the good news is I did grow out of all that, and I like peas and everything today. Although what I have found is I prefer a raw vegetable, like raw broccoli, raw cauliflower, raw carrots, even raw peas in my salad. I prefer raw vegetables over any kind of vegetable that's cooked and mushy.
Well, see, now that makes sense to me because vegetables in their natural state hold all the vitamins and minerals that we need. When we cook them, we cook all that out of them.
Right? That's absolutely right, which is crazy. So it's actually healthier the way I like it.
Yes. And the texture is different. And I know, ladies and gentlemen, that some of y'all have children who don't like, it's not the taste of the food they don't like, it's the texture of the food. And there is some food that very few things I will not eat. Cooked spinach is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
I'll eat raw spinach in a salad all day long, but don't give.
Yep.
Now I'll eat collard greens, I'll eat mustard greens, and I'll eat turnip greens, but do not give me any of that slimy cooked spinach. Don't want anything sliced down my throat.
I know. No, my mom made a cooked spinach casserole that I think it must have had some sort of soup in it. And cheese, and then topped with these yummy, crunchy, delicious croutons. And I would eat that because it was delicious. But, I know. I wouldn't just want like a slop of cooked spinach on my plate. I wouldn't be able to eat that.
I'm like you. That texture, not happening.
Yeah, no.
Now, your daughter also only likes certain foods.
Well, she did. She's, you know, 23 now. She's good. But when she was little, she wanted to eat pepperoni slices. Now, I don't even remember how we first gave her that. Probably my husband, he likes pepperoni pizza. He probably gave her one off the pizza or whatever. But that's what she decided she liked to eat, was pepperoni slices. And I couldn't even eat, you know, pepperoni slices, like one after another. They're kind of spicy. But anyway, it was getting time to send her to school. And I thought, I can't send that with her for lunch. And so we're trying to figure out what kind of sandwich we could pack for her. And we thought, well, we know she likes peanut butter. And we know she likes jelly. So surely she'll like peanut butter and jelly, because every kid likes peanut butter and jelly. So one dinner, we made her a little peanut butter and jelly sandwich, you know, cut the crust off and everything, and tried to make her try it. And she fought us. It seemed like an hour. I don't know. Maybe we didn't go on that long. But she finally gave in and tried it. And she ran to the bathroom barfing, too. She could not. And I think it was a texture thing, too.
Mm-hmm.
All that, you know, texture. And she just couldn't stand it. So we're like, all right, never mind. And, you know, knowing that I grew out of it, my husband happened to be picky, too, as a kid. And he grew out of it. We're like, you know, she's going to obviously be picky. She gets it from both sides. So surely she'll grow out of it. And I'm here to attest, she's 23. She has grown out of it. And, you know, all is good.
Well, they say that our palate changes about every 7 years, and I believe that, because things that I at one time really wasn't fond of, I thoroughly enjoy now. Fried chicken livers is one of them. That was one of my mother's favorite foods. I wouldn't touch them with a 10-foot pole growing up. It was one of the few things I would not eat. But I got sick, and one of the things the doctor said was, Yvonne, you need the liver, because I had lost just about all my blood. And he says, you got to rebuild your blood.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
my dad went and bought me some fried chicken livers, and now I'm addicted to them.
Mm, wow.
If they're cooked right. They have to be cooked right. They have to have that crunchy taste. But and they have to be nice and tender. But I love them now. I think our palates change.
Yes, for sure. Yeah. Well, I went through low iron a few years ago, and I knew liver was supposed to be good, but I could not get past the smell. So my husband said I should try liverwurst. I don't know if you've ever tried that. And that was some spicy mustard. Oh, is to die for. But I can tell you, if that would have been back in my younger years, I would have thought that was nasty too.
So that brings us up to speed with the new book, Frankie the Finicky Flamingo. Now tell me, what made you write the book? I'm sure it goes back to your childhood and your daughter's childhood. And why did you use a flamingo?
Well, yes, it definitely was inspired because of my own pickiness and my daughter's pickiness. And, you know, I thought surely, well, and actually I have a girlfriend who had similar issues to me. And so I bet picky eaters in their family. And then the funny thing about flamingos, of course, I live in Florida. I don't know actually if they're native here, but they're not. I haven't seen them like out in the wild, but I know they're at the zoos. But, you know, I love birds of all kinds. I think flamingos are beautiful with their pretty pink color. But in the end, if they don't eat crustaceans that are pink or have that pink, I can't remember the word, if it's keratin or I'm sure I'm saying it wrong. They don't have that. They won't keep their pink color. And so it seemed like a natural fit that, you know, he was going to need to be kind of picky to find the right foods, you know, so I played off that.
Because naturally, flamingos are white.
Yeah, yes.
And you're right, the shrimp that they eat is what gives them that pink color. Now, what is so funny is shrimp are not pink when they're in the water. They don't turn pink until we cook them.
Until you cook them, right. That whatever the word is, I need to look that up and know that, but it only shows up as pink when it's cooked, you know. But it's always in there. You just can't see it.
But, yeah, when the flamingos eat it, they get these beautiful pink hues. Now, I have seen some flamingos where they're just starting to turn, and they're white, and then you can see the pink coming in. And those are some of the most beautiful birds I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, yes. I have, too. I've seen, you know, all kind of gradations of that pink color.
So the moral to Frankie the Finicky Flamingo is, if we don't do what we're supposed to do in our eating habits, and we don't take care of our bodies as we're supposed to take care of them with the natural foods around us, we lose things.
Right, right. Yes, you have to find the foods that are right and healthy for you. Otherwise, you're not going to be healthy.
When you were putting that book together, how much fun was it?
Oh, my God, it was a blast. It was a blast because I love writing poetry, and I like rhyming words. And, you know, I'm one of those people that, like, when I meet people, the way I remember their names is I make a little rhyme, you know. That's just how my brain works. And so when I was writing this, you know, I had such a blast coming up with the rhyming words and, you know, him meeting other birds and trying what they eat and deciding that wasn't right for him. And I just, you know, and I love birds and everything. So, I mean, it was really a great fun, great joy to do.
So this would be an excellent book for what age group?
So it is a picture book. So if you're going to read it to your child, that 0 to 5 age, you know, where you're doing a bedtime story time, or once they start, because the rhymes are written, so the children will learn to anticipate them, and so they'll learn the story, you know, after you read it a while, and they'll kind of like, quote, read along with you. And then when they get a little older, between, say, 6 and 8, they, you know, can work on reading it themselves. And so when they're being read to 0 to 5, reading to themselves 6 to 8.
Now, not only did you do this project, and ladies and gentlemen, mm-hmm. this woman is a workaholic. I'm going to tell you. She is in the middle of a now, I've never heard this done before. Mm-hmm. She's in the middle of a children's anthology with a mm-hmm. several writers, what, 10 to 15 that you know about. What mm-hmm. are all these stories linked or based? Are they, could they be standalones on their own? What age groups? When is it coming mm-hmm. out? And why did y'all take that route?
So, one of my author friends owns a publishing house, and she, it was, this was her dream and vision, and she invited several children's
We're losing you. Ladies and gentlemen, we are losing her for some reason. Hopefully she'll come back.
Are you there?
Can you? Yeah, you're going to have to start that over again, Wanda. For some reason, you were sounding like you were breaking up.
Okay, so my friend that owns the publishing house, did you hear that part?
Yeah, heard that part, and then you just, I don't know where you went, in the netherworld somewhere.
Okay, I sounded like a robot. Anyway, yeah. The stories do not necessarily relate to each other. I don't know what anybody else is writing. It had to be 6,000 words or less, and it could be, I believe it could be any age between 6 and 14 we could write for. And so I had a story brewing in the back of my head for probably about 4 years, so I thought, well, this would be a good one to write for this book. Well, it can be a standalone story, and probably will be down the road. I'll publish it as its own story, but right now it's just going to be part of this anthology, and we hope to have it out before Christmas. I wish I had a title for you. We're still in like the voting phase to try and figure out what we're going to call it, but I've already seen the cover. It's a beautiful cover. It has like a stairway up into the sky kind of thing, and, you know, like mermaids and hot air balloons and airplanes, and it's very mystical and magical, and so I think the cover is going to be something kids are drawn to, and I think it's going to be great, you know, once it all gets put together. I can't wait to read it.
What have you got coming down the pike besides that one? What are you going to put out on your own next year?
Well, what a good question. I kind of have two prongs of thought. I have my book that I published this May, Gloria and the Unicorn, that I believe you talked about that the last show. That is, when I originally wrote it, to be the beginning of a series. And so I have the second book kind of sketched out, and I'd really like to bring that out next year. I'm hoping to be able to publish that one next year. Then there's been some talk about, you know, doing a sequel to The Lilac Princess. When I originally wrote that book, there wasn't. I didn't mean to ever have a sequel. But as people that have read it, they've said different things to me, and I thought, well, maybe it does deserve a sequel. And so I've actually written that one. It's good. I just need to get it edited and finish, you know, the rest of the process. And that one's called Dirk and the Dragon, and I hope to have that one out too. But in the meantime, I got this whole idea about writing a picture book, 12 picture books, and then creating a book club that when people join, they get a book mailed to them every month. And so I'm kind of working on that. As you know, Frankie the Finicky Flamingo is my second picture book, but mm-hmm. I've written two more since then. I wrote a Halloween one and a Christmas one. So, of course, those will be for next year, Halloween and Christmas. But so I'm going to start working on getting those picture books together, too. So I don't really know what my exact next project is. I think it's going to be the Lilac Princess sequel, because that one I already have done. And then I need to write the sequel to Gloria and the Unicorn. I have it kind of sketched out but not done. So my goal is always to publish 3 books a year. Next year, we could see 4. We'll have to see.
Wow. Now, are you going to be at the event in Cocoa in June?
Is that the Space Coast Book Lovers?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, I've already paid for that table. I will be there.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, you heard it here first. She will be with us again at Cocoa at the International Palms at the Space Coast Book Lovers Book Event. And mm-hmm. you want to go and meet her and bring your children and let them pick out her books, because I'm telling you, the artwork and those books are to die for. They are absolutely mm-hmm. beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you.
And then by then, I'm sure you'll have at least one book out, maybe 2.
Right, yeah. Yeah, for sure, because I'll have the anthology with me, and then hopefully I'll have the sequel to Lilac Princess by then.
And real quick, ladies and gentlemen, I was telling you about the Lilac Princess when we lost Wanda earlier in the show, and the mm-hmm. crux of the story is this little princess has a lot of responsibility and too little freedom, and she wants her freedom, and she sneaks out of the castle, and things start going awry, and she has to fix things, and she does. But it is a great learning story for children to learn about responsibility, and that, yes,
mm-hmm.
we do have freedoms, but with those freedoms come responsibilities, and that sometimes we hurt the ones we love by making foolish decisions. Would that be a pretty good synopsis?
That is a fabulous synopsis. Absolutely. You're so right. With freedom comes responsibility. You know, you can't just be free. Wee-hee, you know, there is some responsibility to that. And that's a great synopsis. That's absolutely that's what that story is about.
Well, you are not going to believe this, my friend, but we are drawing near the end of our hour.
I can't believe it. That went really fast.
They go faster and faster when we get on the show and start talking about all the things we love.
Yes, so, yeah, they do. They fly by.
But real quick, what I found interesting when I did my deep dive on you is the books mm-hmm. that you love to read are sci-fi and spiritual, and yet you write children's books. I find that amazing.
Yeah. I kind of like to read a lot of different things, but those are the types of books that I'm drawn to over and over again. But I like spiritual books because of my whole personal spiritual growth inside, and sci-fi is just, I mean, I grew up on Star Trek and, you know, Star Wars, and I just love all that. And of course, I live on the Space Coast, you know, and
right.
so I just love all that stuff. But, you know, I mean, I like a good rom-com too, and, you know, I like a lot of things, but I think I really, I love children. I love working in a school system. Of course, they are our future, and we need
yes.
to take care of them and help them grow up well. And I feel like kind of inside of me, that's my calling, you know? And so if I can help them, whether through writing my books and putting good messages in there for them, or in my day job where I'm a guidance counselor, then that's what I want to do. With the time I've been given here on Earth.
Well, you do a magnificent job, and don't ever stop, because you have a handle on how to make our future more beautiful with these children, and I am so honored that I get to call you friend and fellow author because we both believe that our children are our future. And Lord, we've lost too many of them, lost too many children that we'll never know what they could have done. So with all of that being said, and since we are drawing to a close, and will you come back next year?
Absolutely. I would love to. Thank you so much.
Okay. We will bring you back. So tell the folks where you can be found and where your books can be found.
Okay, so my books are on Amazon, and the best thing to do is just go on Amazon and type in my name, Wanda Luthman, and all my books will pop up there. I do have a blog where I blog at least weekly about other children's authors and then, you know, topics related to children and helping them be the best they can be. And that's at www.wandaluthman.wordpress.com. And, of course, I'm on Facebook and Twitter. Facebook, it should be /W Luthman. Twitter is Wanda Lu, L-U, 6-4.
So, ladies and gentlemen, go and hook up with Wanda because you will not be sorry. She's an amazing children's author. And she teaches lessons as well as entertainment, and children are drawn to her books because they're easy reads. And like she said, they can be read to them up until they start reading. Then they start mimicking you as you're reading them, and pretty soon they're reading them themselves. This is how marvelous this woman is. Don't hang up when the show goes off because I always like to give you a few little tidbits. But I do want to say thank you for spending an hour with me, even though we had some technical difficulties. We just soldier on being the women that we are.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me, Yvonne. It's been wonderful.
Well, you are most welcome. And ladies and gentlemen, there are tomorrow night, my friend Hydra M. Starr and author Alder Strauss will be here to talk about their beautiful anthology called Bon Appetit. You don't want to miss that. It's a book to die for. And that will be at 8 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time. And then we're off until next Wednesday when we start again at 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, because Saturday night at midnight we go back an hour. Don't just feel special, ladies and gentlemen, be special, because if you just feel special, you'll never be special. If you want to achieve greatness, please stop asking permission, because nobody's going to give it to you. In fact, they'll try to pull you down into that pit of despair because they don't want you to succeed. The difference between who you are and who you want to be is what you do. So if you're not happy with who you are today, then change what you do so that you can be who you want to be. And you know that I always say this, ladies and gentlemen, your smile is your business card. Your smile is your logo. See, I can't talk anymore. Your personality is your business card. And how you leave others feeling after having had an experience with you, ladies and gentlemen, that is and will always be your trademark. People will never remember your name, nor will they remember what you look like, but they will always remember how you treated them. Is that not true, Wanda?
That is the truth. That's the truth. I love that. That's a good saying.
Feel free to put it up anywhere you want to put it. So ladies and gentlemen, this is Yvonne Mason with Off the Chain with my wonderful and beautiful children's author, Wanda Luthman. Please go and hook up with her on Facebook, on Twitter, on WordPress, on Amazon. It's getting to be the silly season, ladies and gentlemen. These would be ideal books to get for the little ones in your family, the little ones of your friends, because they will learn so many lessons. So until next Wednesday night at 8 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time, it will be Eastern Standard Time because we roll back Saturday night at midnight. So those of you in my hearing, don't forget to change your clocks back or you'll miss the show. So at 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, we start again. Tomorrow night will be Eastern Daylight Time with Hydra Starr and Alder Strauss. This is Yvonne Mason with my guest, Wanda Luthman, and we are saying Good night.
Good night. Thank you, everyone.
Now, we are off the air, so when this show, when we get off the phone, the show will go up in archives. I'll put the link up on my page, and I'm going to tag you in it like I always do. Take it and do with it what you will. Pimp it everywhere. And then tomorrow I'll put it up on podcast.com, Podcast Garden, SoundCloud, Mixcloud, and Spreaker, and I'll tag you in those links too, because we are heard in over 70 countries now.
Wow.
And
that's
the more
fabulous.
You come on, it is. And the more you come on, the more you're heard, the more you're heard, the more people will buy your books from all over the world. Isn't that exciting?
That is really exciting. That's amazing.
So thank you again, my darling. And I will get you set up for next year, probably April or May. And by then,
that'd be good.
We'll pimp out your new books and pimp out the event in June.
Good. Yeah, that'll be awesome. And you'll be coming up for that too?
I'm planning on it. It's on my list of things to do. So, yeah, I've got the hotel room. I just hadn't sent in my money yet, but getting around to that.
Yeah,
but
I understand.
I'm going to get off from here, and I will get you the links up as soon as it goes into archives.
Okay, awesome. Thank you so much. This has been so much fun.
Thank you, darling. Thank you for spending an hour with me.
Yeah, you bet. I'm sorry about the technical difficulties.
It happens. It's live radio. Don't worry about it. We got through it.
We did. You carried on.
Soldier on. I'll talk
Soldier
to you later,
on.
Honey.
All righty.
Good night.
Good night.